Made in the USA fossil fuels alter the country's trade status.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the trading day. A senior Republican in the U.S. Senate wants the country to think long and hard about the decades-old ban on exporting unrefined U.S. crude oil. Now, these exports require a special waiver from the president. Lisa Murkowski, who's on the Senate Energy Committee, said today the ban causes disruptions and does little to keep U.S. prices stable. Shale oil production is radically shifting the economics of energy and of trade. There's word this morning that America's trade deficit has hit a four-year low. Gus Fauché is senior macroeconomist at PNC Financial Services Group. Morning, Gus.
Good morning, David.
So this morning we learned the trade deficit, the gap between what we import and what we export, has hit a four-year low. I suspect that what, fossil fuel has something to do with this?
That's right. With the U.S. producing more energy goods, that means we need fewer imports of energy goods. So that's reduced a trade deficit, and that's a positive for U.S. economic growth.
Because of the holidays, we're not getting the official government jobs report for December until this Friday. But what are you thinking going into that report?
I think we'll see job growth of 200,000 in December. That's the pace that we've had over the past 3 or 4 months. I also expect the unemployment rate to hold steady at 7%. There is a big drop in November. I don't think we'll see that repeated again in December, in part because I think the labor force is growing. We have people who have been discouraged, who have dropped out of the labor force because of the poor job market, are now starting to come back in, and that's preventing the unemployment rate from falling a little bit faster.
Now, those data will be for December. It'll be interesting to watch January, where extended unemployment benefits run out unless Congress does something.
That's right. And what we could see is we could see some of those people who had been getting unemployment insurance benefits, who had been a little bit pickier in trying to find a job, they may be under a little more pressure now, so they may be looking for work in January. And that could actually push up the unemployment rate a little bit in the near term. I still expect it to fall throughout 2014, however, and end this year at around 6.5%.
Gus Fauché, PNC Financial Services Group, thank you.
Thank you.
Beekeepers and honey producers both hold annual meetings today. It's a tough time to be in the bee business, as American honeybees are dying at a disturbing rate due to what's been labeled colony collapse disorder. There are many theories for this, but as Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports, the problem is so severe it's become a big business concern.
American Honey Producer Association President Randy Verhoek says 10 years ago their annual conference was intimate.
We get in different beekeepers to speak, different scientists from the universities.
But with the decline of honeybees, the guest list has grown.
We're going to have Bayer, Dow, Monsanto basically putting the cards on the table.
Producers worry, as honey sales this year are expected at no more than $280 million, $30 million down from last year. And they're concerned about certain potent herbicides and pesticides. There's also concern from beekeepers about the farmers who are quickly wiping out plants bees need for foraging as land gets converted for corn and soybeans. University of Illinois professor May Barenbaum says the more widely attended meeting shows as the bee problem worsens, cooperation improves.
We really should take a lead from the bees. If anybody has figured out how to work cooperatively, it's the honeybees.
Considering that honeybee health threatens the pollination of billions of dollars worth of crops every year, Barenbaum says she's optimistic. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Want to see Marketplace live? You can enter to win a chance to join us at the Norse Theater in San Francisco on January 28th as we discuss the new era of philanthropy. Details and rules at marketplace.org/trip. Technology startups attract loads of venture capital and can even lead to useful innovation. It's a culture that has grown up close to oceans. You can drive from Silicon Valley to the beach at Santa Cruz in about 40 minutes. In New York's Silicon Alley, the subway will get you to the beach at Coney Island at about the same time. But what about startups thriving away from the traditional coastal hubs? Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Tech investor Max Wessel wrote a recent article for the Harvard Business Review online saying, basically,
don't build your startup outside of a super hub, a well-established ecosystem with funding, talent, and the ability for liquidity events.
Wessel says you can only find the VC funding and high-tech talent and big companies that could buy your little company in three places.
New York, Boston, and Silicon Valley.
I think it's unbelievably myopic.
That's investor Brad Feld, author of Startup Communities and co-founder of TechStars, a major incubator program for entrepreneurs.
You should decide where you want to live your life and then build your life around that.
Feld points out he and other entrepreneurs have made Boulder, Colorado, the nationwide leader in startups per capita. Another place on that list, Provo, Utah, where a warren of startups feeds off legacy tech companies like Novell and Ancestry.com. In a gleaming Provo office suite is Qualtrics. Its 350 employees crunch masses of market data for corporate clients. Ryan Smith is CEO. He recently landed $70 million in venture capital from two Silicon Valley funds. But he says being far from Silicon Valley was actually good for growth.
We were bootstrapped for 10 years, basically. What we killed is what we could eat. You've got to be extremely scrappy. Some of the most innovative times at Qualtrics have been when our back was up against the wall and we had to make payroll.
Other Utah tech entrepreneurs said employees are more loyal here, not itching to jump ship for a higher wage or a hotter startup every few months. Max Wessel concedes you might find some of the funding and talent you need in places like Boulder or Salt Lake City, but otherwise,
any entrepreneur who's looking at building a new business might be better off moving
to New York, Boston, or Silicon Valley. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And before we go, good news. They've come up with an antidote to quinoa. Reports from Japan suggest that Frito-Lay is selling Cheetos flavored like Mountain Dew. The concoction may also be useful in counteracting the deleterious effects of kale. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.